back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into football season. Doesn't mean that I'm going to stop talking crab cakes. I have placed my scene for those of you watching on our YouTube and WNSTV channel at Fadley's in Fadley's Market. I did that sort of to tease this guy because had him on a couple, 5-6 months ago. I was telling about the crab cake tour back in April. We were talking about his Elway book and eating because he likes to eat and I like to eat. And we share sports, good sports guys, media guys. They share good eating places. And he said, Fadley's is my place. And I'm like, Fadley's is a lot of people's places. So hopefully I made you hungry last month running around the state of Maryland eating crab cakes, Jason Cole.
Yes, absolutely. Anything where you're running around Maryland getting crab cakes, but especially at Fadley's.
Well, it was better than running around sort of fake training camp and watching these lousy football games. I was on day 28 of the tour in Frederick, Maryland, at this beautiful place called the Tasting Room, when I saw J.K. Dobbins roll up his knee and yelled through my mask in the bar, "No, no." You know, I think they can survive all of this, but for the Ravens specifically, Monday night's a very, very interesting test. I mean, I'm flying out to Vegas for this. I have no idea what to make of this season right now, Jay.
Well, I mean, I think you can make some things out of it, especially for teams that are pretty established. I think Baltimore has a pretty established identity for what they're trying to do on offense, what they're trying to do on defense, for what Harbaugh expects. And I think, you know, it's a really good team. You question, is Gruden going to have a game plan that works against Harbaugh? Gruden's pretty good against guys who he's gone against a lot or have pretty established records and are coaches that he considers equals. Not that I would necessarily consider Gruden an equal Harbaugh, especially lately, but I would say that Gruden thinks he's the equal of Harbaugh, and that presents its own little challenges. I would say that on paper, however, if you just look at these two rosters, you know, Baltimore should roll in this game. I mean, they are a markedly better team, but they're not necessarily constructed to easily get through a game like this.
Jason Cole joining us here. You can follow his journey out on Twitter. He's not the mayor of Laverne or wherever that town is in Tennessee where the other Jason Cole is. He's the football one. I reached to you because of the surreal nature of football in Vegas and you covering the league for 3 decades and me being off the boat with the Ravens and now you're 26. And, you know, we're going out to Sin City to do this Vegas thing that my Clark Judge on earlier said Pete Rozelle would be rolling over and like all of that. So I kind of, you know, hit you for the surreal nature of all that. But then there's just, you know, what's going on the last year and a half in general and COVID testing and all of this. Unvaccinated quarterbacks are now
de rigueur.
An Achilles heel for your organization.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I don't get it. If you're a quarterback and you're the leader of an organization and you're not vaccinated, what are you doing? Well, look, you're trying to get through a season. The only thing I can say is that these guys that make so much money, they think that they're above the rest of the team. But this is a team activity. And I know everybody's saying, oh, it's, you know, player's choice. No, it's not. It's not really a player's choice. You're in a group activity. You're around other people on a constant basis, in close contact, if not in literal contact, with other people who may be sick. This is one of the most hazardous jobs you can possibly have in a COVID world. It is your duty, not necessarily to the nation, okay? I don't mean that, although I personally believe that is. But it's your duty to the other guys around you to do whatever you can to make it through the season from a competitive standpoint and to stay healthy from a literal standpoint so you don't get other people sick. So the fact that we've got guys like Carson Wentz or Lamar Jackson or Kirk Cousins or go on down the line.
Well, Cam Newton's unemployed, right?
Right. I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand what people are thinking. And because so many people have taken this vaccine and they're fine, especially people who are already very healthy. I don't get it. But whatever.
Well, I'm sort of tired of arguing. A football perspective, for what we've seen for the league and testing and all these places, it feels like the minute they give guys 3 days off this weekend, we're going to have more. We're back to that point. We played Wednesday afternoon football here last year. I don't know that it will get to that point, but certainly vaccination for teams. I remember when the Eagles were below 50%, you know, back in June. I know, you know, in college football, Lane Kiffin goes, you know, crowing about it and then gets it himself in Mississippi. I still think this will be a factor in the season to the detriment of somebody's season, quite frankly. You got to make sure
it's already a factor. I mean, if Zach Martin can't play on Thursday night, okay, in the opener for Dallas, I mean, that's their best offensive lineman. And what kind of condition is he going to be in the rest of the season if he truly has it? I mean, I don't know if he's vaccinated or not vaccinated. But what if you get a player who's, you know, one of the rare cases where a guy really doesn't feel well the rest of the season? There, you know, look at baseball. There's a ton of those guys, whether it was Eduardo Rodriguez with the Red Sox or Yon Moncada with there's a bunch of players who didn't feel particularly good for a long period of time. And there are a bunch of college football players we've been hearing about. What if your performance is substandard? So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm a little tired of talking about it because we've been going round and round and round about it. But if you're in a team activity, if your job depends on everybody being together and playing together and for the purpose of trying to win a Super Bowl, or at the very least trying to entertain people and play every week, I don't know how you don't see it as your responsibility to get vaccinated and do everything you can to protect your job and protect your team.
I knew when I started getting sports writers on here, we started making sense. Jason Cole, talking all things football. All right, so I get you on and figure I could wind you up about the Raiders, and I see like your most recent tweet before I went on was about Mike Mayock and John Gruden. I've talked to JT the Brick. I've got Amy Trask coming on, one of your running mates out there in the Bay Area, the Princess of Darkness. So I'm trying to go through all the history of Ghost of the Post and Raiders and Baltimore and all this. I have no basis for Vegas on all this, but I will say, once you start to do the math on how much money Gruden's made, where this is, where COVID was last year and shutting the building down, how much tickets are to go, it is amazing how mediocre the Raiders have been, right?
Mediocre?
8-8.
They're 19-29 since Gruden came back. That's not mediocre. And Gruden hasn't been great as a coach. He's been at best an 8-8 coach since he won the Super Bowl 20 years ago. All right. And I know he didn't coach a lot of those years, but in the years that he's actually coached, he's been entirely mediocre, if not below par. And so people make fun of Jeff Fisher all the time, you know, as being this classically mediocre coach. John Gruden is every bit of, if you're going to criticize Jeff Fisher, John Gruden is right there in terms of having one high point in his career and living off of that one high point where he took over somebody else's team, took him to a Super Bowl, and then we've discovered he's not very good at personnel. He's not very good at running an organization. And if you look at their draft picks, and you know, I'm not saying that the five guys that they took in the first round in 2019 and 2020 are busts. We don't know that yet completely. But none of them are impact players. And if you're taking players in the first round of in this league, and you take five of them in 2 years, at least two of those guys should be impact players, guys who change the X's and O's of the game. And none of those guys, Josh Jacobs doesn't, Henry Ruggs doesn't do that, Abram doesn't do that, Arnett doesn't do that. None of those guys that they have drafted in that two-year period, we'll see what happens this year, are impact guys. And that is a damning statement about the personnel side of it. And I know Mike Mayock's in charge, but John Gruden is the one with the final say. And John Gruden's fingerprints are all over all of those picks, especially the offensive players like Ruggs and Jacobs.
Well, Mayock being famous too, you know, and on TV and Gruden coming back and Mark Davis giving all this money and getting all this money from Adelson and the state of Nevada. This is where I called you in, because I knew you'd have some thoughts on this, and having been an old line Raider coverer and, you know, back in the day, this was inevitable, right? I mean, you may have been sitting with me at the Biltmore 5 years ago when this whole thing, Del Rio was coaching the team at the time, and who's going to Carson, and where are the Chargers going, and where are the, like, all of this, I'm going to see sort of the cherry on the top for all of Al Davis's lawsuits back in the 80s, right?
80s, 90s, 2000s. I mean, there was a lot of lawsuits there.
We were always told that they were going to give us a franchise when we settled all the lawsuits. That's what we heard.
it was a nice promise. I think the Raiders, from a business standpoint, in terms of being able to get public support and public interest, made a fantastic move and go to Vegas. The fact that they got to the point where they had to go to Vegas is a damning statement about Al Davis and, to a certain extent, Mark Davis and their inability to monetize what the Raiders were worth, okay? And the fact that you have one of the most glorious traditions and one of the most rabid fan bases in all of sports, and you couldn't turn that into it. I think Amy would best to talk about this, because she tried with Al to get him to understand branding and marketing and off-field money and all of these things that he never cared about. He wanted officials to pay him a lot of money. He wanted the league to pay him a lot of money. He wanted to fight with people over that, but he was never willing to do the things that commercially, marketing-wise, the things that Jerry Jones did with the Cowboys. Al Davis was never willing to do those kinds of things. And as a result, the Raiders ended up having to go to Las Vegas at a certain point, instead of having the power and the tradition to stay in Oakland, which is what they should have done, okay, in the long run. And I'm not saying Vegas doesn't deserve a team. Don't get me wrong. But the Raiders should have been able to capitalize on what they were in Oakland. And now you have this team in Vegas, which is going to do fine. They're going to make a ton of money. They're just horribly managed from a football standpoint.
Well, maybe that will be on display Monday night. Jason Cole is here. You can follow his journey out on the Twitter thing. He's Jason Cole 6'2", as in 1962, which is also had John Zeman on. It was his first year being in the Colts band was 1962. So we're talking about Ed Asner in movies. For the Ravens and for your feelings about injuries and where they're you lose to the Bills, you feel bad about things. You know you're going to lose Judon. You know you didn't have much of a pass rush. There'd be questions about that. Then on the offensive side, we got to throw the football. We need wide receivers. You go out, you draft. I don't know that what we're going to see Monday is going to look too dissimilar from what we saw 2 years ago, because I don't think they really want to give the ball to Gus Edwards 30 times. I don't think they want to throw the ball to any number of these Sammy Watkins, Mark Andrews, no matter how much money they gave him, 35 times. So who's going to run the football? My gut is it's going to be Lamar more than we want it to be.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I think that obviously they would have liked to run the ball 30 times a game with the combination of Dobbins and Edwards. Now they're looking for who takes up a lot of where Dobbins' carries. I mean, Edwards basically takes Dobbins' carries. Who's now going to take the carries that were supposed to go to Edwards, right? And is that Lamar, or are they going to be able to find somebody else who can do it? Because, like, I don't think you have to be a super skilled running back in that system to be effective. I think you have to have good bursts and strength straight ahead, and then let Lamar do all the perimeter stuff and the attacking. And so I think they're going to be fine in the regular season. The test for the Ravens is this. What is Lamar when you get into critical games in January when you're on 3rd and 8? All right.
Now, and you're losing by 4 points.
Correct. It's a close game because the other team has a really good defense. It's very disciplined and is not going to attack Lamar and give him opportunities to take advantage of him. They will sit back and let Lamar come to them and play disciplined, right? Which is what happens against Lamar, all right? And he can't force action at that point in time because people are just doing what Tennessee famously did in that playoff game when they beat him, all right, 2 years ago. So eventually in this offensive tack, you get into a number, say 3, 4, 5, 6 third and eight situations. Some of those you're behind or just barely ahead. Is Lamar a good enough thrower? And does he become a good enough thrower in those situations? Or do you just avoid as many of those as you can? Instead of having 5 or 6 in a game, you reduce that number down to 1, 2, maybe 3, right? And then you get through it. So, look, I believe in Lamar Jackson as you have to commit to him. You've done a good job of committing to him. I would sign him to a long-term deal. I would hopefully be able to get out of it sooner than later, depending on how his body holds up over time. I think he's going to hold up okay for 7, 8, 9 years because of the way that he plays. All of that said, I think that a certain thing, number of things have to align for you to win a title with Lamar Jackson as your quarterback. And among those things that have to align is you got to avoid certain number of situations that put him in jeopardy as a passer. And conversely, you probably need some luck that other teams that have better quarterbacks, and that's Kansas City and Buffalo, don't beat you along the way.
Well, you mentioned him throwing the ball. There's so many other things that go on in that orchestra right now, including the offensive line protecting him. Once they lost Stanley last year, that became problematic. Now they don't have the running back who probably – you know, in their mind was going to carry the ball 2 to 250 times, right? Throughout the course of the season. I don't know where those handoffs go. I know they've talked about wanting to pass more efficiently and all of that. They were very efficient a couple of years ago, not as much last year, but right. Part of that is who's going to catch the football, and it all falls on Lamar. There were drops last year. Lamar had his own number of issues, but I think as an orchestra, we haven't seen this at all. Like, they haven't put the team on the field yet. Right, Zeitler, no, yeah. Villanueva, I mean, all of that. That's why, to me, I'm very fascinated with how this goes on Monday night for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I don't think that what you're going to see on Monday night is going to be terribly much different than what you saw last season in terms of design. Okay, and frankly, I wouldn't be terribly worried about that. I think that, again, the Lamar Jackson experience as it stands to date is good enough that you're going to get into the playoffs because you're going to play enough weak teams and take advantage of those teams, and you're going to get to 10, 11, 12 victories. You're going to play good enough defense. Harbaugh's a really smart coach, handles situational football very well. You're a playoff contender. Okay, barring, you know, the roof caving in and some other.
Well, you're up on the Ravens and down on the Raiders. You think the Ravens are going to – I'm going to be happy Tuesday flying home, huh?
Well, I don't know. Look, I don't want to say that on Monday because the first week of any NFL season is so unpredictable because of what you're talking about previously, which is people don't play in the preseason. So the first 2-3 weeks of any NFL season are basically what the preseason used to be. People getting back to hitting, getting their timing back, getting used to tackling again. So a lot of freaky things happen in the first 3 weeks of the season. But I'm talking about over 17 games. Over 17 games, I'm not worried about the Ravens barring, you know, a number of things that are unpredictable. Injuries, you know, bounces the ball, things like that. I think this is a really good organization that's going to win 10, 11, 12 games. And is going to be right there at the end as a playoff contender. That's what they are. What I worry about when I think about them is how do they get through the playoffs and how do those games get executed so that they can take advantage of what they have with Lamar Jackson and cover up for the things that he doesn't do well. And that's simple. He's not a great, efficient passer. He was 2 years ago when he burst onto the scene and people didn't know how to deal with him. Last year, they took some things away from him. They forced him to do some things differently. He was not as explosive. That's okay. That's what the league is going to do. They catch up with people. We've seen it time and time again. Now, what does he do to adjust? Does he become a better pocket passer? Does he become more efficient? Does he lose that sort of loose arm throwing style that he has where, you know, the release point is not always the same? That changes. I really do. I think. But even if he doesn't progress, you've got last year as sort of your platelet for what you're looking ahead to. And last year is good. You're in the playoffs. You're a contender. You're close. I'll take my shot with that.
maybe a home game in January instead of having to go on the road to Buffalo. Jason Cole's here. You can find him at Jason Cole 73. Tell me what's going on with you in your world and coverings of all things football. It's changed a lot, and between COVID test and going out to Vegas and not really having access to players, certainly not conducive to doing the type of work we've done most of our lives.
No, but most of the work that I've done most of my life is sort of transitioning to more books. Working on another book right now. Actually wrote a screenplay recently, so knock on wood.
Wow. Real writing.
Yeah, and so those are two projects. I've got about 16 others that are waiting to go, and Hall of Fame voter, and obviously keep track of the league very closely, but that's what I say. I'm glad that I don't cover the league on a day in and day out basis now, because I think it's really hard to develop relationships with, you know, the most important people in the league, in my view, which are, you know, the players. I mean, that's what everybody comes to watch, right? And you want to have those relationships with those guys. I mean, obviously, general managers and owners and coaches, all we want. But they're not the ones who make the final decisions on the field. It's the guys who actually play that you want to hear from. And it's just not, you know, the coverage right now is not conducive to really understanding what's happening on the field right now. And that's not any reporter's fault. That's just real life.
Well, I hope we get back to learning more, doing more, seeing more, elbow bumping, going to Super Bowls, doing all that. In the meantime, it's always good to visit with you. I'll always take a food recommendation from you, Cole. You recommend it, I'm eating it. How about that? You've earned that gold star status with me.
Yeah, I don't know what the Vegas restaurants are looking like these days. I'm sure most of them are back, but I always wanted to get a Morimoto's place.
You know, okay, all right. My kid did that.
I would try Morimoto's place in Vegas if it's still there. That's got to be just dynamite. And I know that Michael Simon, who I just adore, Michael Simon's work, opened a place in Vegas within the last year. So
I eat at Simon's Barbecue Joint in Cleveland when I'm there downtown.
Mabel's, yeah.
Mabel's, yeah. I like
yeah,
that.
That's strong. That's really strong stuff. I mean, he does a great job. So I mean, look, you can't go wrong with the restaurant scene in Vegas. There's plenty there.
I'll come hungry with a bib. I'm not staying long, and I'm COVIDed up to get in and get out and get one piece. We got a lot of AFC West, man. We start with Oakland and the Kansas City. Your John Elway book. We're going to see Denver later on this month and stuff like that. Yeah. You're going to let the cat at what the next book is? I mean, the Elway book feels recent, right?
It was a year ago. Yeah, just a year ago this week, basically 1 year old with John Elway. So, I'm not going to know because this is a project I'm doing with somebody else. So I can't give that away.
Well, I'll look forward to it. How about that? And I'll look forward to having you on, hopefully visiting and eating some good Mexican food somewhere near the border. How about that?
Absolutely. That'd be fantastic.
Jason Cole. He is Jason Cole 73, the way to find, or excuse me, Jason Cole 62. What am I saying? Why did I say 73? I got Marshall Young.
Because you want to make me 11 years younger than I actually am. So I appreciate that.
62. Why did I say 73?
I don't know, but it's okay.
It's being my head.
You're up the numbers by one each. That's all. All right. Good to talk to you, dude.
Good to have you aboard as always. Jason Cole joining us here, author of 7 books and the eater of all things, Michael Simon. And go check out his John Elway book. There's some Baltimore stuff in there too, believe it or not. We talked about that last year as well, a whole lot, including Oneonta. You can find me anywhere the internet is served at BaltimorePositive.com, WNST AM 1570. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Luke's Out, Knowings Mills, and I'm probably somewhere at this point looking for coconut water, my friends at the Wise Markets, and rounding up. We are BaltimorePositive.com.